Hugh.
I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A cube.
A cube? That's right.
Yeah, I like that.
Hello and welcome. Out loud and proud, and here we are. The Q Film Cast once again from deep inside Jolly Roger Studio.
Yeah, beginning again.
I came in a little different on this one.
A little bit.
Yeah, hello and welcome. This is the Q Film Cast, everybody. And once again, whether you're with us online worldwide or perhaps nationwide on one of our affiliate stations, thanks as always for tuning in. If you don't yet know, we are the show which brings to you our review of a particular film currently streaming on this thing called Netflix Instant. We gather here each week at Jolly Roger Studio, where we go around the table to tell you what we thought, that and our, our top three list, always inspired by the movie in question. This week, we're talking about the 2010 Who's Your Daddy film? Beginners stars Ewan McGregor, Christopher Plummer, Melanie Laurent. So if you've seen it, keep listening to see if you agree or disagree with our take on it, or, hell, if not, even better. Maybe it's better, because that way you listen to see if it's something you may want to cue up yourself.
Sure.
I love it. As stated, also inspires our top three list. Little tie into the film.
As they always are.
And you know, if there's a cute little dog in a movie, you got to talk. You got to tie it into the
You
cute
know
dog.
Where I zero in.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Right?
It gets you thinking about dogs.
Sure.
Man's best friend.
Man's best friend.
Which isn't, it doesn't have to be a dog.
I'm glad you got that. I knew you'd get that.
You know where I'm going with this.
I don't know exactly.
You'll find out.
Right.
You know who I'm married to, right?
Right.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Top three this week is Man's Best Friend in Movies. Yeah, once again, I'm Michael, along with to my left, as always to my left, we're talking about James Hard Sub Savage.
What's up, Maestro?
Oh, I'm doing okay, Savage. You know, another week here.
Yeah. How was your week? Talk.
First of all, went to a bowling alley and was not asked to leave because I had a dog with me.
Ah, that's a good thing.
I would have stayed.
Dog friendly.
Yeah, they let the cat. They were okay with that.
Oh, okay.
I take my cat everywhere. I had a pretty good week. I didn't have to show up in New York to find a friend, only to find out that friend was in L.A.
But you love New York.
Where I just left.
But you love New York.
I have had good times in New York City. Yes, I have. Many times. Every weekend for a while there.
Yeah.
If you want to keep up with us, let's actually do this. Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, Google+, YouTube channel. You can certainly find
all
us there.
Of that.
Savage, you know what I'm saying.
I do.
To your left, Savage.
Yes.
Let's pick up where we left off. We're talking about Matthew St. Hoodie, the patron saint of absolutely fabulous outerwear.
Thank you, Michael.
And you queued up this film, by the way.
I did, yeah. That's me.
And I'm going to ask you why in a minute. We'll get to that.
It was the purple sweater.
It was the purple sweater.
Was he wearing a purple sweater?
Yes, he was.
Well, he wasn't sure.
He wasn't.
Plenty to talk about.
Plenty to talk about.
He thought he had a purple
Moving
sweater.
Moving on.
Yeah. Okay. To your left, Max Gumbo Johnson. There you go. There's everybody except the greatest producer in the history of the Q Film Cast, Adam the Bomb Rogers.
Hello.
Look at that. So smug.
Yeah.
You see how smug he was, Gumbo?
He's always smug.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. That'll be his new name, Adam Smug Rogers.
Smug Rogers.
We can come up with something.
Fruit Ninja really never took.
Well, yeah. We're going to have to work on that. I forgot Fruit Ninja.
I was thinking to myself watching this movie, I wonder if Adam's playing Fruit Ninja right now.
Nope. I didn't even have to ask. I
watched the whole
I just
thing.
Knew.
No distractions.
And now you have something to confess. Is that, no, but, all right, let's get into it. Before we get going too far, I want to ask you, Hoodie. It's your selection. You wanted to cue this film up. You wanted to talk about it. Why?
I liked it.
Good enough. Hey.
Purple sweater.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's just good enough.
That's it. Yeah. And there's a lot of metaphors. It's amazing. I've seen this movie quite a bit. I'd say half a dozen times I've watched this movie.
Really? You get something out of it every time.
You can actually start making even deeper and deeper connections. Every time you watch it, you find a new metaphor that's running through the whole thing that you hadn't noticed before, and it's just a really deep, deep, emotionally impacting movie. I mean, crazy.
Now, did you?
It is. It's just crazy how much thought went into doing this movie.
See, I'm tantalized. I can't wait to hear rendition and his breakdown. I can't wait to hear it.
Crap.
He's got a thing.
He has a thing. Nope. It's a very nonlinear film, too. Let's point that out right away.
True that.
I kind of like nonlinear films.
Yeah.
They don't go in order. They're not in synchronicity.
Not in synchronicity.
Yeah. We had a little bit of horror last week.
Yeah.
I think we have some horror coming up here after this one. So this is a nice little in-the-middle mix here.
Break. It's a break.
Written and directed by Mike Mills, not the guy from R.E.M.
That's what I thought. I was like, oh, he's branching out.
Yeah. You think he ever gets that?
Yes.
I'm famous, Mike Mills. Not that one. This movie stars, as previously stated, Ewan McGregor, Christopher Plummer. We know he is, The Sound of Music, A Beautiful Mind, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, and Up. Max, do you know anything about Melanie Laurent?
What was that movie we watched with her?
Night Train to Lisbon.
Was that her?
There's another one, though, wasn't there?
Glorious Bastards.
Yeah, that's what she is.
She's good in that.
Yeah, I like
it. And as we stated when we talked about her during our Night Train to Lisbon episode, she's known as the French Marge Simpson. Do you remember this conversation?
Yeah.
Does she do the voice for Marge?
She does the voice
France?
For Marge in
France. In France. In France. She's the French Marge Simpson.
All right.
Okay. So Matthew St. Hoodie selected this. We already know about that. So let's get into it some more. Here's where we defer to the critics. And, you know, I like to say we critique the critics.
Critique the critics.
Let's critique the hell out of those critics, man. Gumbo Johnson, let's go to you, man. Let's start it off with you. IMDb, something point something. What do you think IMDb gave the 2010 film Beginners?
7.2.
How did you know? That was not a guess.
That was a guess.
Sounded like a guess.
I think he nailed it.
You know what?
I would
call that beginner's luck.
Oh.
He's been doing this for a while, though.
So I'd say it was 7.2.
It's 7.2. You didn't cheat?
Wow. No, I didn't cheat.
Okay.
Crazy.
That's
if
crazy.
I was
crazy
cheating, I'd have said 7.2.
Such conviction. James, hard. So hard.
Yes,
so
sir.
Sub.
Yes.
So savage.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes. Let's go to those jokers.
Okay. All right.
Something percentage-wise, critics-wise.
Critics.
What are you thinking?
Critics, 84.
You cheating bastard. You looked at my notes. I know this is an inside job. This is an inside job, isn't it?
Beginner's luck.
Beginner's luck. You had beginner's luck. You had beginner's luck. Hoodie, let's test your luck.
Dude.
Users.
Trick.
Users on Rotten Tomatoes gave beginner's
I can't be
luck.
The only one that doesn't get it. I'm going to... Oh, 77.
77. Look at all the beginner's luck.
All right.
Yes, 77 from the users, 84 from the critics on Rotten Tomatoes. IMDb 7.2.
Well, look at that.
A lot of people kind of like this film.
Crazy.
Some people do.
All right, let's get into a little bit of what this movie is. What do you say? You want to do it?
Sure. Sure.
Let's do it. Okay, so here's what you have. Beginners, 2010. From writer-director Mike Mills comes Beginners, a comedy drama about how deeply funny and transformative life can be, even at its most serious moments. Beginners imaginatively explores the hilarity, confusion, and surprise of love through the evolving consciousness of Oliver, played by Ewan McGregor, who meets the irreverent and unpredictable Anna, played by Melanie Laurent. He meets her only months after his father, Hal Fields, played by Christopher Plummer, has passed away. The new love floods Oliver with memories of his father, who, following the death of his wife of 45 years, comes out of the closet at age 75.
Wow.
Dang, man.
Yeah.
About time.
Free at last.
You've been in that closet a long time. He comes out of the closet at age 75 to live a full, energized, and wonderfully tumultuous gay life, which includes a younger boyfriend, Andy, played by Goran Visnjic of ER. The upheavals of Hal's new honesty turns funny and moving and brings father and son closer than they'd ever imagined they could be. Now, Oliver endeavors to love Anna with all the bravery, humor, and hope that his father has taught him. So, why don't we take a break here? Listen to a piece of Beginners, I think a trailer, and come on back. We're going to have a fabulous conversation. Jazz hands, everybody. Here you go.
Oh, wow.
My parents got married in 1955. They had a child, and they stayed married for 44 years until my mother died. 6 months later, my father told me he was gay.
I'm gay.
I remember him wearing a purple sweater when he told me this, but actually he wore a robe.
I'm gay.
He was gay the whole time they were married. Oliver. I just met a girl.
You point, I'll drive.
This way.
Hello?
Oliver?
Yeah.
They had some wonderfully loud music in the club tonight.
Insane.
What kind of music's that?
Probably house music.
Yeah. House music. Okay. House music.
The bronchoscopy revealed a mass.
Well, let's not rush out and tell everyone.
Sometimes I wonder.
Before Anna, I had four serious relationships. I let all of them fall apart.
Just be happy about it, huh?
For the first time I saw I'm really in love.
And I am once again with you.
People like us, half of them think things will never work out. The other half believe in magic.
And each kiss an inspiration.
Sex, life, healing, nature, magic.
The memory of love's refrain.
This is what I'm supposed to feel like. Yeah, me
too.
All right, so there you go, Beginners 2010. You know what we do here, Max?
We use words here.
It's a new kind of radio. All grunt radio.
Let's talk a little bit about what this film has as far as trivia, a little bit of facts and figures. Did you know, at age 82, Christopher Plummer won an Academy Award? 82?
Yeah. About time.
He's always playing younger men.
He won an Academy Award for this film right here. Oldest person ever to win an Academy Award for a supporting actor.
I shouldn't say about time. He'd won some before.
Yeah, I guess he did.
Is this the Sound of Music?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
That's a big gap.
He was the biggest star in the world for a while.
He's only won one Oscar.
Really?
Yeah.
For this?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I'm left with.
Disgusting.
I'm telling you what I left with.
He's won some Golden Globes and stuff like that.
Golden Globes are a joke.
I think Max is right. Do you think this was a bit of a sympathy nod? 82?
Probably.
You got to get this guy. You got to give him an Oscar.
He killed this part, though. He did a great job.
He did a great job, but it's like, you know, they finally gave Scorsese one. You know, golly, the guy's made all these movies and finally gets one. Come on.
3-6 Mafia had their Oscar before Scorsese.
That's right. Can you believe that?
Really? Come on.
That's crazy. What a you know, if I'm Scorsese, I'm saying, I don't want it, man. Badge of honor over here.
You take your pull a Brando.
Yeah.
You're right.
But I'll tell you what I'm left with. At age 82, the guy looks fantastic.
Well, he passed for 75. Easy.
I mean, that is a fit 82-year-old man.
Yeah.
Did you know that the film is partly autobiographical?
Hey, write what you know, buddy.
There you go.
That's right.
Cardinal rule.
Yeah, that's probably pretty easy source material for the director then. Melanie Laurent, did you know, Savage, was cast after director Mike Mills saw a video of her on YouTube giving an interview where she was smoking and wearing no makeup? That's kind of strange.
She is so French. I must have her. Yeah.
So French.
She's stinking.
Did you know that Melanie Laurent claimed that the canine star of the film, Cosmo, the dog,
Cosmo,
did not like her very much because he was jealous of Laurent's relationship with co-star McGregor and director Mike Mills? The dog was...
Probably not.
I think it's because she was French.
Exactly. And dogs have a heightened sense of smell.
Smart chain smoking.
Smart dog.
Right.
I thought this was kind of interesting, too. Producer, did you know that the role of Hal was intended for Max von Sydow? He declined at the last minute due to the nature of the subject in favor of appearing as a mute in Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, which he was nominated for an Academy Award for.
Yeah.
He also was the first choice to play Henrik Wagner in the English version of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, ironically. Christopher Plummer replaced him in both of these films.
So he's kind of the B guy.
He's a poor man's Max von Sydow.
Did you know that Christopher Plummer was attracted to the part because he liked the fact there was no self-pity regarding his character? I would be attracted to a character.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I don't like self-pity.
I can't imagine Sydow turned it down with the subject matter. I mean, he's a pro. He's an actor.
Well, yeah, maybe he doesn't want to be typecast.
Yeah, not at his age.
Yeah, right?
I've made 800 films, but this one they're going to remember me for. Did you know that Ian McGregor was not a dog owner before he made the film? During the course of the shoot, he decided that he absolutely had to get a dog and is now the proud owner of a poodle.
I thought he was an owner of a dog.
Nicely played.
I had to go get a French dog.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be inspired to get a dog, you want to get a... Nothing wrong with poodles. I can't say.
Hey, poodles are aggressive.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah,
get
poodles
a
are
dog.
A real poodle is a very aggressive dog.
Yeah, but he could have at least got a Labradoodle. Something with something else into it. Like a lab and a poodle.
You figure you got a Scottish Terrier.
He looks like a German Shepherd guy to me.
Speaking of dogs, let's talk about our currency, because you know, Max, we do not use thumbs up or thumbs down in this show.
Flicked.
It's flicked.
That is totally flicked.
I need to look that word up. I know what I don't
miss that word.
I miss that word too. We need to bring it back.
I don't think it's a word.
It's not afflicted.
It's
word.
A very middle.
Conflicted's a word.
No, it's like if somebody's got something wrong with this. Man, that dude is flicked. Man.
Flicked. You're just making stuff up.
That's middle school.
I used to
straight
say that's
up.
Middle school. All middle time. School. Right. That's my boy. He's right.
Everybody
told
said
you.
Flicked.
Okay, if this thing was flicked twice, would it be reflicted? Is there a reflicted out there?
I want you just flicked. I use it twice, even more flicked.
All right. Well, it's flicked. Using 1 to 10, flicked. We don't use thumbs up either. Thumbs down. We let the film tell us how we're going to review.
That's what we do.
And today we're using dog thoughts. 1 to 10 dog thoughts. Any dog you want, any breed you want, guys. Matter of fact, my dog is going to be a Labradoodle. Labradoodle. If y'all want to use your own kind of dog, you know.
Yeah.
Sure.
And Hoodie.
Uh-oh.
It's going to you because you know what? You queued this film up. It's your responsibility to kick this thing off. 1 to 10 dog thoughts. What's your dog and how many are you giving?
If I go with my dog, there'd be no thoughts.
Okay.
Whatsoever.
You better use a different dog.
No. I'm just going to go with any other dog.
Jack
other than
smart.
Than my dog. And they'll probably have at least 9 thoughts, I think, in their lifetime. And
I like it.
That's coincidentally my number. It only leads to common sense that you would like this film. You queued it up.
Love it.
How many times have you seen this film, by the way?
More than a couple.
More than a couple.
More than a few.
Why did
more
you
than
get,
a few.
Yeah, more than a few. Nine. That's almost as high as you can go. What did you like about the film?
Like I said, I've seen this more than a couple times, and every time I see it, I pull something different out of it. It's one of my favorite things about watching a movie, just being able to watch the same movie and pull something different out.
And that goes all the way back to one of our first reviews. You went crazy for Upstream Color. You said the same thing. I want a movie I can watch again and again, get something new.
Right. It's key. It's key to a good movie for me. Absolutely. You can't have a good movie.
Yeah.
Listen, people.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is.
This is the rules.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay. Yeah, there's a lot there. You can peel it back, look at it different directions.
And Christopher Plummer, he did a bang up job. I don't think that's a gimme.
I didn't think.
It didn't hurt.
It wasn't a sympathy Oscar.
It didn't hurt.
Right. He did a great job. He was one of my favorite parts of the whole thing. He was just so lovable.
Yeah.
Just wanted to pinch his little cheeks.
I can't imagine anybody at the end of the movie, regardless of whether you're like Von Cito and don't like the subject matter, you're still not kind of somewhat charmed by his character.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that.
And them gays.
And them gays.
Max Gumbo Johnson, what do you want to do, man? We're talking about Dog Thoughts, Beginners 2010. What you going to go with?
My dog is a mutt because that's what I own. Xena's a mutt. She would probably give this movie six thoughts. She would think about this movie six thoughts.
Because she's old.
Because she's old. And she's probably going to come out of the closet next year on her. I have a gay dog. But six. Six dog thoughts.
All right. So, kind of take it or leave it kind of movie. Some stuff there, maybe.
It had some charm to it. It had some things to chew on a little bit. But it started, speaking of dog, it's better than average. I'll give it a six.
But have you seen it like four or five times?
No, I've only seen it.
Well, then
there you go.
Stricken from the books.
How about the producer, Adam? My entire thought was like, I wonder how many rounds of Fruit Ninja Adam's played at this point. I was thinking, I may be wrong. You may absolutely blow me away, my man.
Never know.
Bring your review out of the closet. Put it up here for all of us to see proudly, loud and proud. How many dog thoughts? I think it's probably going to be low, but how many thoughts you giving to this movie, Ray?
Here we go.
First of all, I have an Akita.
Ooh,
so beautiful dog. I wrote something, so y'all just bear with me here.
He's taking a page from my book.
This can be good.
I don't think this is.
Actually, I am, because in the immortal words of Michael, I am going to get my stuff out of the way and sit back and let you guys talk about it.
All right.
Just give me 90 seconds, guys.
90 seconds.
This is something I never would watch if I was scrolling through Netflix. I actually went in hoping for a pleasant surprise. Also, finding out the subject matter of a guy going through his dad's cancer and eventual death, I thought maybe this was a little bit too heavy for me, but this movie made me feel nothing.
I think at this point we need a little bit of underlying score right here. I want some music.
I'm not saying nothing as in bringing up emotions from my own father's passing or even that I was bored watching this. I mean absolutely nothing. Yikes. I never once felt connected to any of these people. The only actor that was interesting was the dog.
I was just about to say.
Every performance was emotionless. No one seemed to care about anyone else in the film. Even the directing was more emotionless with horrible camera placements and movement. Every conversation dragged, went nowhere, was boring, and made no impact. The relationship that blossomed was more boring than riding 10 hours in a car with no radio.
Oh, my God.
Kansas.
Wow.
Kansas.
I saw this coming.
Yeah, he saw Kansas.
There was no emotion. There was no emotion when they met. They didn't even flirt. Not even the wannabe cutesy, I have laryngitis shtick, could save the scene. Their whole relationship was emotionless and boring except for one scene with them still in their roller skates. Their breakup was emotionless, and when he started crying, I never once thought it looked like he cared, or maybe I didn't care at that point. It seemed like he was told to count to 10 in horrible weeping sounds while playing hide and go seek.
Wow, I cannot wait to hear more.
Once again, poor directing. I also prayed that they did not get back together because I knew it mean me having to suffer through more emotionless garbage.
I think he has his Ichi.
Yeah,
Adam found his Ichi.
Right.
I didn't pray hard enough, obviously. Them reconnecting was just painful. He was so boring that even his car matched his personality.
My lord, dude, hurry up.
I'm going here.
You're going to listen.
I believe he had to be on so much Ritalin that his dosage would have been taken by a cavalry of horses.
Oh.
And then he obviously forgot to take his dose one day and he had fun during the fireworks scene.
What?
The only... the only thing I believe the director did was going back and insert the scene with his mother saying he was composed to explain how boring Ewan McGregor's character was and try to save face in front of his friends as they sit yawning watching this craptastic of a movie that he made.
Adam.
Once again, I
just wish there was some emotion from
drama.
Adam right now.
Right.
And as much as I obviously love Christopher Plummer as an actor, I give this a 2, and that's only because of the scenes with the dog.
Thank God.
Hell yeah, we got a 2.
We got a 2 on all that, and you give it a 2? You can give it a 1. What are you doing?
The dog.
Okay.
The dog. Only because of the dog.
The dog was kind of awesome.
All that, and he still gives it a 2. Oh, Adam, I love everything about
you.
Well,
I give it a 2 for, you know.
Okay, I think I know what
Adam,
you're going with.
I give you a 10, because that almost made sense, buddy.
Almost.
10, good job.
You know, the fact that he sat down and wrote that fairly eloquently.
Yeah.
Adam, I'm impressed. Those are like big words strung together to make sentences.
Big words.
And then sentences strung together to make paragraphs, and paragraphs put together to make a story.
That's almost as if you...
I'm thinking there was capitalization and punctuation involved.
Yeah. Wow. There is. You want to see?
No, I don't. I want to go over... All right. We're going to let you tear into this one here in a bit. You can tell us your disdain in detail during the scenes.
Right.
Fantastic job. You've never done this before. You stuck the landing, sir.
You spoke elegantly.
Savage. Yeah. Follow that up. I think you gave this something or other.
Poor man.
I don't know if I can follow that up, but in the immortal words of Adam, I don't typically gravitate toward these films, these indie, quirky comedy romantic things, but apparently I do, so maybe I should watch them, you know, more. I found this film delightful and charming, at times very tender, at times very melancholy. I'll give it an 8. I've thoroughly enjoyed this film.
I'm actually surprised by that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't gravitate towards these
Because you typically
films.
Don't gravitate towards these things.
Right.
8 dog thoughts.
8 dog thoughts, and I have Rhodesian Ridgebacks.
You have beautiful
dogs.
They're
awesome.
And...
and a Cocker Spaniel.
All right, yeah. Well, listen, you know my situation at the house, right?
Yeah.
Can I borrow someone's dog?
You can have my dog.
I have cats. I married the beautiful
cat woman.
You married the cat lady.
I did marry the cat lady who can really cook. I tell you my rules, right?
Yes.
She follows the rules. So you know my situation.
No dog thoughts.
If you could have a dog, what kind would it be?
A wolf.
If you were going to be a dog, what dog would you be?
Shih Tzu.
A bitch.
No, he's got the Weimaraner thing going on.
What the grayest dog?
A greyhound.
A greyhound. Thank you, Max.
Right.
Oh, I love it.
Listen, we're going to do Battle of the Written Word tonight, Adam, because you know I do this. In my weekly rendition, I write stuff down.
Why do you think I made fun of you?
All right. So
me both.
I tell you this what. We have letters of opposite opinion. And let me tell you what I'm getting into. Here's mine. Where do I begin with beginners? First thing, Adam, this is not an off-the-rack sort of film, even for the typical meandering and self-absorbed indie piece that may just come to mind when you start watching it. This is very loose, very non-linear, and it certainly has potential to be somewhat off-putting if you're expecting something straightforward. Okay, I completely understand why you could reject this. It does have eye-rolling potential and fruit ninja potential.
Fruit ninja potential.
Maybe even Angry Birds potential. The chances of you finding yourself so bored is very high. I understand that. But for me, this movie is a gorgeous, poignant, wonderful piece of cinema. Mike Mills does something here that on the surface can be taken as hokey or simply experimental, but to me it isn't. This felt genuine, I was captivated by it, and to be honest, a bit overwhelmed at times. The movie, if I'm getting it right, is about memories and what they really mean, how we rely on them, how we hold on to them, and how they make up our consciousness, these postcards we write to ourselves to guide us, that at the time we have no idea that we're even writing. And the way that's what I got from it. But that's what I got. This is a film about memories. I dare you to forward to the 109-minute mark of the movie and let Oliver share with you his memories of Anna in 2003. Then tell me you can find a better or more effective 20 seconds in a movie. Everything is impactful in this film. It moves with simple grace and warmth all the way through. As far as everything else, the acting, the content, the relationships, the reveals of who these people are and why they are superb. Then there's the nonlinear telling of the three separate pieces of time and space, overlapping with one another. It's wonderfully put together. Everything moves with complete grace once again. And I don't care about whether I understand someone's particular journey or not. It doesn't have to be just like my story for it to resonate with me. I actually kind of prefer it, you know what I mean? When you can kind of see the world through someone else's eyes. And this thing is a payoff of believability. When we get the reveal that Hal's wife knew she was marrying a gay man in 1955 and was fully prepared to fix it, I instantly knew how accurate everything I just watched was. And the way that Plummer spilled that out on screen was devastating. I got to stop there because I could certainly go on. Adam, I disagree with you wholeheartedly.
I disagree with you wholeheartedly.
You know what?
And I raise you 3.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you this much right now. This is me in 2015. This is what the sky looked like, the stars, my feet, and this is how my face looked like when I talked about beginners.
Very he disagrees story. With you wholeheartedly.
Wholeheartedly?
How many dog thoughts do you give it?
Wholeheartedly.
Here's what my face looks like.
How many dog thoughts do you give it?
I'm going to go 9. 9 wow. Solid. It could go 10, but I'm sticking 9.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
Yeah, I'm going 9 dog thoughts on that. There you go. What do you think of that?
It worked.
I think it's time to...
What's the total on the dog thoughts?
34 dog thoughts.
34 dog thoughts.
Wow. You know what we need to do? Stop right here. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the scenes, why we landed where we did, but I say right here. We listened to a piece of the film, 2010's Beginners.
This is what the sun looks like and the stars. This is what it looks like when we eat, when we tell each other the stories in our heads. I was born in 1965, and I was born in 1971. This is what the sun looked like. Her pets, her parents. She left home when she was 16. She lived here and here and here and here. She had 3 serious relationships. She left all of them. I had 4 serious relationships. I left them too, or let them fall apart. We didn't go to this war. We didn't have to hide to have sex. Our good fortune allowed us to feel a sadness that our parents didn't have time for, and a happiness that I never saw with them. We didn't know how we learned the stories in our heads, but sometimes they stopped running and I can really see Anna's eyes in 2003, her ears, her feet. This is what it looks like when she says, I love you, in 2003. This is what it looks like when she cries. When she tells me there's always a new empty room waiting for her. They used to make her feel free. Now they make her feel the opposite of free.
Back again, we're talking about Beginners. Yeah. 2010, and that's the film you just heard from right there, trailer. All right, Battle of the Open Letters. Let's call that our Battle of the Open Letters. Right. Pre-break, Adam read his letter, hated it. I read my letter. I liked it.
There you go.
So let's talk.
You kind of loved it. When you have the timestamp that you can tell somebody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Boy, this thing punched above its weight for me. But let's go to Hoodie.
Yeah, I think you said it, you know, best.
Let me say it here.
Well, you wrote it down.
You're more better than I am at speaking words.
We could say it in synchronicity. No, what is it when you think about this film? What comes to mind? Like, what is it that you like the most?
It is. I think that there is an emotional attachment that you either have for this film or you just don't have toward this film. I used the word metaphor earlier, and I think I don't know if that's the right word anymore. Yeah. But when I first saw this, I remember being like, wow, it's a great movie. Why is it called Beginners? And the more you watch it, the more you see that everything in this movie is a beginning of something. Uh-huh. And it's literally everything. He's beginning a relationship, beginning life without his dad. His dad's beginning life as a gay man, yep. as a man with cancer. So everybody's beginning something in this thing. And that, I don't know, that really hit home for me. That there's something always beginning for somebody somewhere. All the time.
And it addresses a lot of the beginnings of your previous lives, too. Not just where you're at.
Right. I'm killing myself watching this.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
We'll get on with it.
It's a quick jab for you there, Hoodie.
Right, right.
But it also has, like you were talking about, it harks back to memory.
Yeah.
And it makes these really nice bridges that you just keep discovering. Even watching this time, I never realized how close his mom was related to Anna. They're very, very similar if you can get like to the heart of the characters. Very similar. They're both actors, basically, if you ask me.
Both Jewish. Both have Jewish hang-ups about
So there's about that. There's all these nice little bridges that are just like undercurrents through the whole movie that if you really get in there and dig around a little bit, you'll start making these connections. And that's really what I look for in movies are the deeper underlying messages and currents.
Yeah, and I told you in my letter, this thing's full of believability and great reveals. Layers, peeling them back, and there's a little something. If I watched it again right now, I would probably get even more. And I like that about movies like this, where it's like, you know, if I watch it again, something's going to be there for me. It over-delivers and punches above its weight.
Very much.
What about you, Max Gumbo Johnson? You're kind of hot and cold. What you got?
I like some things. That was the first thing I thought of when you said the metaphors. I was like, man, everything in this movie is a metaphor for something else. It's like even the dog was a metaphor for something. There was a line at the beginning where he said something about he said something to the dog.
Oh, yeah.
I should have written it down. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it.
Right. You know, it I'm like, just your thoughts. Right.
No, it was something. Something
he was talking about the breed. That
thing. And it was something to do. It was like, okay, I see the dog is a metaphor for his dad.
Right, right.
That sort of thing. It was full of that. I thought a little too much of it, believability sake, maybe.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
I don't think it was poorly acted. I like Ewan McGregor. I always did like that guy.
Yeah.
Christopher Plummer was great in it.
He's phenomenal.
I think everybody did a good job here. I just didn't, and maybe it's me, I just didn't make a connection with any relationships outside of him and his dad. I definitely didn't like his dad's boyfriend.
I didn't like him either.
Couldn't stand that guy. Yeah. But I'm like, well, are we supposed to not like the guy? I think we're not supposed to like him really much. But and that comes off in Ewan McGregor's character. You can tell he's kind of suspicious of this guy.
Yeah.
Sitting there looking at him all the time, like, what's this guy's game plan?
Yeah.
You know, is he trying to inherit his money or something? I don't know. Then he sort of comes around at the end, too, and goes, like, oh, okay, I guess the guy's okay. That never happened for me.
Yeah.
And his whole relationship with the girl, I thought it came across as hollow.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It did to me, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Emotionalist?
I could see where some of it was, okay, I get this, I get that, but as a overall, I just didn't really buy into it.
Yeah.
I love the dog.
You love his thoughts? You like the way they use the dog's thoughts? Or did that see, when they first introduced that, I thought, please don't make it this. Don't make it this. Don't use that just as a kit. And later on, it began to really fit the film.
Yeah, it really did.
It fit the characters. It fit the premise. It fit everything that they wanted me to think about when watching this film.
Well, they didn't overuse it either.
They didn't overuse it.
They probably used it 10 times for the whole movie. Yeah, maybe.
Half a dozen times.
When you start to realize that him and his dad, Hal, shared this common thread where they would talk to inanimate objects. Hello, house. Hello, Hal.
Hello, chair.
Hello, chair. And you'd see him doing the same thing.
Yeah.
You realize that, okay, this makes sense for this guy. He is the kind of guy that would talk to his dog internally like this and have conversations with his dog.
Sure.
They didn't just throw it in there for a hook. It made sense to the character. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There were a lot of scenes, though, that really leaned hard on almost kitsch, like the roller skating down the hallway.
Yeah.
Like that. I was like, you know, there are little points in this that just...
The quirk factor is way up.
That's exactly right. The quirk factor was just a little bit over the line.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And but for the most part, I thought that it was just right on point with what I needed this movie to be. Just
great pacing, too. The non-linear thing really worked for me.
Yeah.
I mean, there's one scene in this movie where nothing was left untied. There's one scene in this movie where that awful gay boyfriend, I'm going to have to forgive the film this because I didn't like that character at all. He came into Hal and said, I have a caterpillar in my hand. And he emptied it. Oh, it's an empty hand. You're like, well, what's that for? And then later on in some of the flashbacks, you realize that, no, he used to show up with a caterpillar in his hand.
Yeah.
And then the emotional impact was felt well after that scene was shown prior.
Yeah.
You felt the emotional impact of these scenes later when you realized what you were actually watching. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
But what do you have, Savage?
I did like this film. I understand what Max's point is because I think there is a sense that there's not a deep pain associated with this. It never really explores the pain, the loss of your parent or your love.
But was it supposed to?
I don't know. And I think that's where some people are disconnecting from it.
I can dig it.
You know, it seems to skip along the good parts, particularly him coming out so late. You know, there's no negative repercussions for his homosexuality. There's no negativity associated with that at all.
Wait, one second here.
He didn't come out when he was older. He came out when he was younger.
Well, no, listen, he's saying there's no, what'd you say, negativity?
Yeah.
Well, he had a very cold relationship with his wife. He had a very disconnected relationship with his wife. Is that not a negative?
He also had a very disconnected relationship with his son. So his son didn't know him his whole
life.
That's
not what I'm talking about. Okay. I'm talking about when he's out and proud as a gay man. There's no negativity associated with that at all.
He's in San Francisco. Well, it's 2010 in San Francisco.
I'm just saying, it just seems like everything was great. It does explore deep themes, and I think on multiple viewings, you'll start to see it. I mean, things like a restraint and duty, and love, and what you sacrifice. And the beginnings all again. I saw it as more of everybody. Like, he never started. I don't think Ewan McGregor ever started. His house is so white and blank.
Yeah.
The furniture is just functional. There's no taste to it. There's no style to it.
Mm-hmm.
And only after he meets her and after his father dies do you see these things of color start to come into his house.
Right.
A personality start to develop. But I also liked the tone. It was very tender and melancholy at times. I mean, it never got into hurt. Mm-hmm. It did delve into melancholy.
Yeah.
And And that's a fine line. And maybe to do that without being maudlin, it's a fine line. And I think it skirted that fairly well.
It did a lot of things well. And I want to talk about delving into just a few things just for time's sake. Three things I want to bring up. Two relationships. Him with her, him with his father, and then the technical aspect of it. Because what I loved most about this film are, once again, the memories. I think that's exactly how people think. Like, you're trying to remember, I remember my father in a purple sweater, but he didn't always wear a purple sweater.
Right.
At the hospital, every time he visited the hospital, it would show the cookie tray, and a different type of cookie would be on the tray. Isn't that how we remember stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, when I think back about my memories, I remember, you know, how my grandfather's hands looked.
Yeah.
You know, his plaid shirt. I don't remember what he said. I just remember those things.
Yeah.
So I think it's very well done like that. That is exactly how people remember the details.
Well, and he was a graphic artist, so he thought in those kind of captured images.
But he also juxtaposed that throughout the movie being like in 1993.
Loved it.
You know, with, and he go through like the thing you kind of touched on. And then you take that into graffiti when they were graffitiing 1993 Bush finds Jesus. So there's a lot of like facts and years that like kind of punctuate the memories factually, emotionally and factually. He's trying to find out all this stuff and trying to really put together who was my dad actually?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
And I thought it was effective, Hoodie. I mean, every time they flashbacked and this is what it was like in 1955, this is where gay people went to hide. This is what people looked like. This is what the sky looked like.
Yeah.
I sat there and was transfixed by that. I thought that was just an incredibly impactful, beautiful way to show memories and how we hold on to them. I thought
extremely
it was
well done.
And remember, like the coins, like here it is. There's one scene when I think about scenes, things that pop. And I think this shows the real gravity of how this film is shown. The nurse is talking about the size of the cancer. His mind starts to wander. She says it's the size of the quarter. You see a black screen with a quarter. Then you see two dimes and a nickel. Then you see 25 pennies.
Yeah.
And I think that when you're hit with that kind of an emotional reveal, your dad has cancer the size of a quarter, I think your mind would take off and start making change. Let's get right into it right here. Max Gumbo Johnson, the relationship with him and her. I bought it. It pulled me. In the end, I was there. What did you think? Did you like the laryngitis thing?
I was really upset when she took the black wig off. I was like, wow, that girl's cute. Oh.
So you're into the Charlie Chaplin.
I guess that's my thing.
The Buster Keaton?
Charlie Chaplin.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I've already told you what. I didn't get why he was bending over backwards to be in a relationship with this woman. I just didn't see it.
She was hot.
Not that hot.
She's pretty hot.
She had no personality.
She was, you know, I don't know, she just didn't seem like she was invested in it as much at the, in the beginning, at least.
Yeah.
Like me in this movie.
There you go.
So...
But it was symbolic. They gave it to you. It's Freudian. It's about his mother.
Well, you know what?
He was dressed as Freud.
Yeah. And the Mona Lisa and Cyclops was there. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I get all that. Right. It's still, I don't know. I don't need that much symbolism pumped out of a movie.
I do, though. He does. Well,
I like it.
I like some of it. I don't need everything to be like that.
I liked the music in this thing, too. Yeah. I mean,
the music was great.
You always do.
I mean, honest to God, the score here just accentuated the scenes. Like in that party scene, I thought this is how it works. You meet someone at a party, you start to get this swelling feeling about someone, and the music comes into your brain.
Yeah.
And it plays out just like this, just this beautiful melodic tone. And here he is, Sigmund Freud, dancing with Buster Keaton or Charlie Chaplin.
Right.
And that's how honest relationships start. And I thought it started perfectly like that. I could see these people actually needing one another right now.
Yeah.
At this point.
Okay.
And I like the fact that she had laryngitis. And it really made
that's
you...
cute.
It was cute, but I don't know. It was just a different way to see people, an introduction of a relationship where one person can't talk, another one's there, and she's writing it down on a piece of paper. Right. It just seemed impactful.
Yeah. What's it called? What's the trope? A meat cute?
Is that what it's
called?
Whatever.
A meat cute. That's what it's called.
Don't know what that
means. With a K?
Meat cute.
With a T.
It's a technique for script writing. Meat cute.
Well, I think that's awfully cute. important relationship. Him and his mother. The flashbacks of the mother.
Loved them.
Every time they popped in, I thought, man, that just resonated with me.
Yeah.
I mean, she was a great mother.
Yeah.
She would let him drive. She would come into the room and pretend she shot him. He'd fall over. They had a very honest, beautiful, intense relationship.
Was a character.
They needed each other because the father obviously is absent. And I felt that.
Felt like it was almost to his detriment, though. I mean, just because she was always so depressed and sad, and she kept almost punishing him with her sadness. And he blamed his dad for that. Go figure. He had fun with his mom, so she was the cool one. His dad was never around, so he blamed his dad for everything. And for his sadness and all that. And that's what I was saying earlier, was now he gets to see his dad in a whole new element, who his dad really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that I thought that was, you know, something I just recently picked up on was, I would assume that he just really didn't like his dad growing up.
Well, yeah, I kind of picked up on that as well. I also thought you had a really good sense of why he was so melancholy and restrained. Mm. You know, when you look back at his history and his childhood.
He was composed.
He was over, and his mother even forced that on him. Oh, he's a composed young boy. Well, now he's a composed man. I wonder where that came from.
Yeah, I didn't pick up that he didn't like his father. It seemed like he just had a very perfunctory relationship with him.
Functional relationship with his dad.
Just, you know, come in, the peck on the cheek, and provide the mortgage, you know, that kind of stuff. I don't see it was like animosity there at all.
I liked Hal. Did you like Hal?
Yeah, I liked Hal. I liked everybody in there. Everybody's likable. Everybody was horribly likable in this film. Except
there wasn't a lot of malice in this film.
Hal's boyfriend.
You're right.
I liked him. I mean, because he committed. I mean, full on.
He never gave up.
I mean, Ewan McGregor?
No, Hal. Gorn Vishnik.
Oh, Gorn Vishnik.
The boyfriend.
I didn't like him at all.
Yeah, he was full on.
He was sneaky, sneaky.
I don't see that.
Well, watch it again.
I might.
I didn't like him. I'm with Max. I didn't like that guy.
I didn't trust the guy. I felt there was something.
Well, there was that. It's because I'm gay, right?
Yeah, that got annoying.
motivation behind going out with Hal.
He got a bad relationship with his father.
Well, you know, I like that too. Because I thought, well, why is this guy wanting to be with this old fart? And he's like, well, my dad didn't accept me as a gay man, so obviously I'm attracted to older men. Okay, that makes sense.
Right.
But you know, they put a lot in here for you to suspect the boyfriend too. And Hal would say, well, you know, at least I'm the number one boyfriend. I know he dates other boys. But at least I get to be at the top of the list. And you've seen just how much he had missed out on his whole life, that he was just willing to live with the scraps. Hal's just living with the scraps.
Yeah.
That's what I got from it. And he's going to have to be okay with that. There's some great dialogue in this, too. And to back that up, can I read this? Great dialogue like this when he's talking to Oliver. He says, it's like when you were a kid. You dreamed of having a lion, but instead found a giraffe. You throw away the giraffe because it isn't a lion? I would rather love a giraffe. And that's what concerns me about you, Oliver. You don't see the value of a giraffe. See what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, that explains to me exactly why Hal is with this guy.
Sometimes good is good enough.
He's settling. Don't do it, Hal.
Don't do it, Hal.
You're Christopher Plummer, man. Come on.
You escaped the Nazis.
Just ask Max von Sydow on a date and get it over with.
He doesn't settle.
Wait a second. Max, you really want me thinking? Max wants to see Max von Sydow and Christopher Plummer in the throes of passion.
There you go.
I didn't say that.
That's what you were implying.
I'm not implying anything, fine sir.
No, that's what you're inferring.
I said, just ask him on a date.
You know, I thought Hal's character, I loved that character. I completely understand why he went more. I like the fact that every time you seen him, it was some pain there. Something he had to trudge through. Like when Oliver thinks back in 2003 when I was with this girl, and he kept doing flashbacks of kisses and kisses and kisses. And he'd stop and juxtapose that against what his dad must have had to do at that stage in his life.
Yeah.
When he had to hide his kisses and hide his love and all. Very impactful. And then at the end, that's a hell of a reveal. I mean, I thought, you know, here comes Hal. And then to find out she knew the whole time he was gay. And then it all made perfect sense. This is how someone in 1955 would have ended up married for these reasons.
Sure.
It all just made sense. It was very impactful, yeah.
And then he tried to cram being gay into the last 5 years of his life by the books and going out to the clubs and
the
house music phone call. What is that called? House.
And he writes
it down. And like an old man, he just writes it down like house.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great, Oliver. Oh, house music. Yes. That's kind of how we talked.
Kind of.
What else can we talk about? There's a lot.
I'm
looking
at my
notes.
They go out with a bang? They put him in the fireworks?
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was.
Mm. Remember when his dad got his hair did too? Getting a spike hair at the end.
Oh, that was nice. That was kind of nice.
Putting it in. Yeah. What's that called? The moose?
Is that called the moose? Oh, yeah. As I say. I'll tell you what, though. I know I'm kind of hogging the conversation here.
No, you're fine.
Can I read one more thing here? I'm going to end it with this. Absolutely beautiful. This is the scene I rewound three times when he's remembering Anna. I welled up.
Oh, welled.
I'm telling you.
I get it.
There's welling.
Anna and I were in a relationship in 2003. This was the sun, the stars. This is what it looked like when we ate together. This is what we looked like when we told stories in our head. I was born in 1965. You see Lyndon Johnson. Anna was born in 1971. You see Richard Nixon. She later lived here and here and here. London, Paris, New York. She had three serious relationships. She left them all. I had four. I let them dissolve. We didn't have to go to war or hide to have our sex like our parents. We had the good fortune of time that allowed us to feel sadness that our parents didn't have. And it just goes, and you're just seeing these intimate flashbacks of just postcards of memories set against that dialogue. And it just pulled me.
And they didn't do that just once. He opened with it, and they did it, like four times he did something like that?
I welled four times in this movie.
Yeah, that stuff is, that's gold.
You know what
gold
else?
Jerry.
You know what else? Producer, you don't want to talk about the film, but I do have a technical question for you. Are you serious? $1,485 for a cremation?
Which, how much?
They charged him, remember, the piece of paper.
Uh-huh.
And the bill was $1,485 for Hal's cremation.
And California at that point, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. San Francisco.
It's technically sound, see?
Yeah.
Cost of living is pretty.
Max, anything?
It's cheap.
Is it? I don't know. It's cheap.
Nowadays, it'd be over $5,000 to $6,000.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Probably in California.
Yeah.
They soak you when it catches on. Oh, we can get way more for this now.
You know, I can understand how a lot of people don't like this
more popular.
Film. You know, I can. I can understand how a lot of people could turn from this. It's a tough film, kind of, to really grasp. But, man, I think when you do, you really get it.
Yeah. But it's also very light, though, at the same time. Just a lightness of being. And another word for that is grace. There is a very simple grace to this
yes.
film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote that in my notes. That's a word that came up for me.
Yeah.
And when you said it, I wrote it down because I thought it was very, very well said.
I want to rename this movie called Grace. I love the mom flashbacks. I loved Hal. That's my favorite.
I did like the mom. I remember writing that down because I forgot to bring my notes.
They're in your head. Use your memories.
But I did remember that, writing that down. Oh, I like the scenes with the mom.
In the museum.
She was cool.
Did you notice that she, I got a sense that it took a lot for her to keep her poop in a group. Because there are many times in this flashback scenes, it looked like she was about to lose it. She's mm-hmm. in the museum and she's mocking the art mm-hmm. and she kind of gets thrown out of the museum. She makes people uncomfortable. I got a sense that this wasn't an easy life for her living with this either.
No.
Oh, not at all.
Maybe she's just a provocateur.
Yeah,
she's
that's probably sassy. What it is.
She is sassy, yeah.
She's a sassy mom.
She was a sassy 50s mom.
Grandma.
60s mom.
Probably smoked Virginia Slims.
Yeah, right.
Played tennis while she was smoking one.
Right. Had a highball glass.
Had a Wilson racket.
Anything? Final thoughts? Producer. Don't read. There it is.
Perfect.
I think that, well, you didn't get nothing out of it. I tell you, he backed me up on the cremation, though.
Yeah.
He backed me up on that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Adam, come on. What? How you weren't, you said you felt nothing. Did you not feel agitated when he goes to New York to get his girl? Damn it, she flew to L.A. They cross-connected. She went one way, he went the other.
Well, she went there for other reasons. He went there for her.
I felt aggravated.
She didn't care.
Still a beautiful scene where he walks it through.
Yeah.
It's like, this is my kitchen. This is where I cook. This is my club. You know.
Right, and there's a bridge to when he was doing that with the dog.
Yeah.
Yep.
All these little things.
That reminded me, actually, when he brings the dog in. He says, this is the living room. This is where we eat. The first thing I thought of was Raising Arizona.
Yeah.
This here's the living room where Ma and Pa chow down.
But again, her place was very white and nondescript either. There was no personality. And only when they came back do you start to see that there's a plant. It's green now.
Mm-hmm.
There's the red here.
Yeah.
There's they start to grow together.
Things became more alive.
Yeah.
You know, in the beginning, too, you really sensed that something happened. I like that opening scene, too, when the movie opens with drugs being poured in the toilet, books being put in boxes.
Yeah.
He looks at the dog sheepishly and says, well, I guess you're coming with me. That's pre-credit. You know something just went down. So it has a great pace that way. And it's honest. It's just honest. And every scene is set up in delivery. That's what I liked about it.
It is, and technically, the flashbacks is handled very well. It's pretty seamless how that goes. Because it almost seems like it's a linear story, but you pick up that it's not.
There's three specific spaces of time.
Yeah.
Before Hal, right, when Hal's dying. And then after Hal, when he's with her.
Right.
And then the childhood.
Yep.
They just twirl around with each other. Probably dance marvelously with one another. You know,
full of grace.
Well, I don't know. I feel like I hogged some of the mic here. Sorry about that. I really like this film.
It's a good film.
Yeah.
I don't normally gravitate toward these films. But
obviously, you have to stop saying that at some point.
No, I just choose not to watch them on my own.
You know,
maybe I should.
I do kind of gravitate to them, but man, there's a lot of bad examples of this kind of film out there,
really
too.
Is.
I just want to throw this out here, too. Did anybody pick up any Woody Allen in this?
Yes. Anytime you get a bunch of walking and talking.
I mean, Woody Allen obviously does this kind of thing the best, or he used to anyway. But, you know, there's that humor at the surface, but he can go incredibly deep really quickly. And I felt that it skirted that line here, too. I was just picking up Woody Allen throughout this whole thing.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, I can see that. I think we need to end this, though. We need to get into our top three. Anybody, one last final poke at the pot here, Max. Anything you want to add? Anybody?
Nothing I can think of.
I say we get into our top three. I like beginners. I'm going to stick with my nine. Anybody want to change?
No, I'm sticking.
Adam, you want to go minus four?
No, I'm going to stick with two.
All right. He loved the dog.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, there you go. Oh. You know what? You are
our
best
friend.
That's
what it is. Number two.
Okay.
Oh.
Well, you are not this man's best friend at the moment. All right, let's do that. Let's take a break one last time. Here's Beginners 2010. We're going to come back and get into our top three man's best friends in film. So here you go.
I couldn't tell him.
It's okay.
No, it's not. You can't hide this from him. He loves you.
For someone with so much relationship advice, you seem awfully alone.
Just act natural. When he's not looking, we'll make a run for it. Okay?
All right, so there you go. There it is right there. Beginners. Yeah, we're talking about a clip from it.
Yep.
Down with the funk, Savage.
Down with the funk.
Let's do it. Let's get into our top three. Inspired by this film, top three man's best friends. Doesn't have to be a dog.
Doesn't have to be, no.
In this film, it was.
Well, maybe. Well.
I went with dogs.
Okay. Well, you know what, Gumbo Johnson? You seem hot for the mic. Let's go. Let's go right now. Let's, inspired by beginners. What's your number three man's best friend in movies?
Baxter from Anchorman.
That's your number three?
That's my number three, yeah.
Oh, no.
He kicked Baxter off the bridge.
Yeah. You know,
wheel of cheese.
I'm yeah. not even mad.
And he had pajamas, matching pajamas.
That's right.
There you go.
It was awesome. Love Baxter.
Yeah.
What a great little dog.
Well, you know, Jack Black kicked him off the bridge.
I know. After he threw a burrito in his face.
Yeah. And he says, all right, well, let's go. I've got Jack Johnson and Tom O'Leary right here. Yeah. Good answer. Good on you.
Dumb. Love Baxter.
Baxter, and he saved him from the bear. He went and hung out with the Bears.
Mm-hmm. The Bears.
Adam.
Yes.
Yeah, you go right now, man. Number three, what you talking about when we talk about top three man's best friend? What's your number three?
Ted from Ted.
Huh?
Ted from Ted.
Oh, the stuffed bear. Animal. Oh, yeah. Of course.
Of course.
Absolutely.
It's his best friend. It was his thunder buddy.
Right.
That could be a number one.
That is an awesome answer.
That's an awesome answer. Yeah. I hope you have a theme. They better all be teddy bears.
I don't have a theme.
Okay. Hoodie, go. I'm going to give you the mic here. Number three, go.
Sure. Puffy from Something About Mary.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that dog that
evil dog.
Oh,
yeah.
With the calf, they kicked him out the window. No, yeah. Jumped out the window.
Did the dog have a name? Was it Puffy?
It was Puffy.
Ball.
It was Puffy.
Okay.
Puffy Ball. My bad.
And that awful looking woman with the overtan.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
She's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh, terrible.
Savage. Kick it in the head. Kick it in the head. What you got?
Well, subgenre. This a policeman's best friend.
I love it because he always has like a little theme inside.
Yeah,
the
policeman's
theme.
Best friend. The buddy cop movie, but it's a cop and a dog.
There's been a few,
and the one that ruined the genre was Top Dog with Chuck Norris.
Wait a minute, you're saying it ruined the genre?
It ruined the genre.
Okay.
Yeah, they haven't made one since.
Nice.
Well, the implication there being that they had made some good ones to begin with.
Nice. Right.
So, Chuck Norris, Top Dog.
Nicely done. I have to go a different direction. You know that I married the cat lady. I'm going to go with top three cats as best friends.
Okay.
Sure.
All cats, all the time, all the way. My number three cat is best friend is Llewyn Davis's cat.
Yeah, love it.
That's a good
one. I'm going Llewyn Davis's cat.
Okay. I don't know what that means.
It's a good movie. I want to see that movie so bad again.
It's one of those indie romances.
No.
Gravitate toward those.
That ain't any. Come on. That's a Coen Brothers film.
Okay.
You had to see it.
Okay.
Llewyn Davis's cat. You'll want to
see it. Now.
All right.
Commit.
Gumbo, around the table we go, and we're talking about number two, man's best friend inspired by beginners.
Dog from The Road Warrior.
Mad Max's dog.
Mad Max's dog.
He's so good at top threes.
I'm not.
It's not as good as The Train from The Jerk, though. That's my favorite.
If Steve Martin would have.
Wait for the number ones.
Actually, he did have a dog.
He had a dog.
What was his name, Max?
I can't say his name.
Shirthead.
That's it. I'm just going to pick that.
I should call him Lifesaver. No, you should call him Shirthead. Oh, okay.
Yep. But I went with dog.
Okay.
Dog.
Shirthead.
You can go with Shirthead.
I just did.
Right. Got it.
Adam, you Shirthead. What's your number two?
Aslan from Narnia movies.
Is he a pet?
Which one is he?
He's man's best friend.
He's a lion.
Well, he helped everyone out.
He's Jesus.
He's still a
He's
friend
man's
of
best
him.
Friend.
He's a friend of him.
Yeah.
Hey, friendo.
Okay. I don't like the answer. I like your other answer better. Just say Ted again.
Ted part two.
Okay, I see where you're going there. Okay, getting a lion. All right.
Yeah, he helped him out. He was their friend.
Okay, that makes sense.
He's probably going lions and tigers and bears. And oh, my.
Oh, he could do this.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wow.
Speaking of, oh, my. Oh, my God. Matthew Sanity, what's your number two?
Oh, I already gave it.
Shirthead.
Is it Shirthead?
It was Baxter. I'm changing it.
It has to be Shirthead.
On the fly.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
Right.
I love that movie.
Love
I want that to be not. Actually, I think my number one is Shirthead, but I won't say it.
Right,
Savage, what's your number two?
Policeman's Best Friend, the movie that defined the genre, or the originator, was K-9, Jim Belushi.
That's a stupid movie.
I love that movie.
Because the genre was born and died in a mere 3 years.
Right. The dog cop buddy movie was kind of a little thing there for a while.
It was.
I still got a number one.
Hey, I'm talking about cats, so right. I can't speak. My number two cat, inspired by Beginners, Mr. Bigglesworth.
All right.
From Austin Powers. Yeah.
Mr. Bigglesworth. You know I'm talking about?
I do.
He was bald.
He didn't have any hair.
Originally, he did have hair.
Hypoallergenic.
That's right. They showed him in a flashback.
He was like a Persian.
That's right. Do you think they actually shaved the cat for that?
No.
No, they just went and got
one of those.
The Sphinxes.
Yeah.
Those hairless cats.
Producer. Produce for me. You're number one. Oh, Max.
Is it my turn for number one?
One it up.
Why'd I skip you right then? That was rude.
Rude.
Number one, Max. What is it?
Blood from a Boy and His Dog.
There you go. Don Johnson.
Telepathic dog that helps you hook up with chicks?
Absolutely. I want one.
I don't need one of those.
I needed one years ago.
Called puppies, right?
And you can talk to them. And then when you get said chicks, all you do is eat them.
Wow.
What?
Wait a second, huh?
You went to a dark place.
This guy's a good dog. This guy's a good dog.
Okay.
All right.
Am I the, have y'all noticed nobody?
No.
A long time ago. Oh, remember the cannibalism part.
Don Johnson.
Yeah, I'm with the dog, not Don Johnson.
Okay. Producer, get me out of this one, man. What's your number one?
R2-D2.
Okay. I see where he's going. I, sir, am going to back you up on that. That's a quality.
That's a pretty good one. It's a pretty good answer.
Great answer.
Excellent.
He saved him all the time.
It's better than your number two.
He stretched. He went deep, and I like it.
So what Adam's saying is to be his best friend, you have to save him a bunch.
Yeah.
That is your number one job as Adam's best friend is save him.
What about you, Hoodie? What's your number one?
Zero, Nightmare Before Christmas.
Great one.
Look at that.
I don't know. What am I thinking
of?
The little ghost thing. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Friend in the afterlife.
Well, you're my friend in this current life, Savage. Yeah. So tell me right now.
Policeman's best friend. The genre-defining
Turner
movie.
Turner and Hooch.
Turner and Hooch. They twisted it because they killed Hooch. He died.
Well, at the end, he's
Give left. It away already.
I know. Spoiler.
His bloodline lives on, Hoodie, because he's left with the puppy of Hooch.
Yeah, that's definitely the defining.
Yeah, that was
high
it.
Point,
the epitome of the genre.
The buddy cop.
Yeah.
Movie.
I guess I'm gonna go ahead and end this round this out. Right, last number one for me.
That's you.
I'm talking about cats. Of course, it's Jinxie from Meet the Parents.
Jinxie cat.
There you go.
Because how could you leave him out there with no food and clothes and no toilet?
Remember that?
He loved it.
Yeah. From what? What was that from?
Jinxie from Meet the Parents.
I only saw that one time.
Oh, come on.
Oh, man. That's a great movie.
Are you kidding me?
It's funny. I love that movie.
Every time it's on, I have to watch it.
It's pretty funny.
De Niro loved that cat.
Yeah.
Boy.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It was Jinxie. Yeah. Excuse me. I remember now.
And he loved the grandparent in the urn.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Listen, let's talk about some real quick Twitter foul outs.
Shout
outs. We're getting short on time here. Michael, obviously we do this every week, right? Rohan Michael Morby at Rohan MM says, Wilson the volleyball?
Wilson.
Yep.
Wilson.
Only friend he got. The fault, it counts, right?
Oh, yeah, that's most amazing. Certainly counts.
How about Rosender at Rosender says, Zombie Ed from Shaun of the Dead.
Love it.
Yep.
That's cool. Ooh.
Dustin at SuperDustin83 says, Toothless from How to Train Your Dragon.
Yep.
Hooch from Turner and Hooch.
There you go. Yep.
Cool Derek. Cool Derek at Cool Derek. He's cool because he says, Old Yeller, Babe, Robin's Dog, Diggity from Trax.
Trax. That Shadow Stevens movie?
And The Cat from Lewin Davis.
There you go.
Kevin Weinhardt at Money Dubs. Hey, Kevin. First time I've heard from you here at the Q. Nice, and thank you for playing along. You say Clyde the Orangutan.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that's a good answer.
That's a great answer.
Classic.
Any which way but loose. David Schultz, our old friend Schultzy at Private Falcon. I don't know, bud. Johnny Five from Short Circuit.
Johnny Five Alive.
Why does everybody say that?
I don't know.
People mention Short Circuit.
Kevin Dillon at Kevin Dillon 316 says,
I've been waiting for this one.
Says Gertie from Moon.
Oh, that's a good one.
You like that?
Man, Twitter killed it.
Gurgle it.
Moon.
Guys, I think we need to end it here. Let's get into next week's big reveal. And I think that the reveal goes over to the producer. Next week, it's you, man.
You're give it a two.
Yeah. You going to come in here with a letter?
Maybe.
Right. Let's find out. Let's see if he writes a letter next week. A very short letter.
It's a movie I've been wanting to talk about for a long time. Let the right one in.
Do we have to read it?
Yes, you're going to have to read it.
Okay. Yep. I don't mind reading.
Let's be real clear.
I take that back. I give it a one.
Let's be real clear. They've made remakes.
Let the
movie.
Right one in.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're not talking about the remake from 2010.
Not let me in, but let the right one in.
Right. Got so it. Make sure you're.
Scandinavian.
If you're playing along, we're talking about the Norwegian film.
Norwegian.
From 2008. Some people would say one of the best vampire movies of all time.
Oh, it's a vampire film. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I'm just telling you. It's an interesting movie.
Oh, yes.
We're going to come back here next week, Max Gumbo Johnson. Talk about vampires. So that's where this one ends. This was Beginners 2010. Thank you, Matthew St. Hoodie. I liked it. You liked it. Some people didn't like it. So yeah, if you want to watch it, it's on Netflix. Don't look for The Beginners. Look for Beginners and give it a shot. And then you can go to thecufilmcast.net. Yeah, that's right. You go there and you tell us what you think of it or any film. And next week, it's Let the Right One In. And that's where this one ends. So we're going to cue it. We're going to review it. And until then, however it is, you say, let's just say good night.